Hello, and welcome to our podcast today. I'm Adam.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Gwen.
And I'm Jack. Today, the question we are going to be talking about is in chapter... What chapter is this?
13.
In chapter 13, what motivates our IM to give the eviction speech?
Okay.
All right.
So, the first thing I thought of is the surface reaction, which is he doesn't want violence to occur. But I think beyond that, there's something way more personal. When he sees the old couple's personal effects in the street, he says, "Why were they causing me discomfort so far beyond their intrinsic meaning as objects?" And just in general, in this passage, he starts to develop this sense of uncertainty. That's on 273, by the way. He seems very uncomfortable with something that's going on here, and he says something a few times to the effect of that he didn't want to think about it. So I was wondering, what is it that he sees in this eviction that hits so close to himself, something inside of him?
Yeah, I definitely think, like, even leading up to this, there's a lot of speculation or questioning of, like, why does he do the actions he's doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, leading up to it, where he, like, we talked about, like, the yam scene, like, about the yams, or
yes.
when he destroyed the bank in the room. It's just, there's a lot of interesting parts of him that we're still getting to know. Like, it's almost like he has a personality that changes a lot.
Oh, yeah. I definitely agree. I think it's interesting. It kind of seems to fluctuate. You know, he's walking with his yam and embracing his own culture, saying he's not afraid of what people think of him. And then a scene later, he's trying so hard to impress people.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. I think it's more realistic than a static, or a not static, but linear character development where he goes from point A to point B. There's a little bit of step back,
fluctuation,
step forward,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, like, that kind of fluctuation in personality shows, like, right when he, like, happens upon this eviction, like, there's a lot of him sorting it out and trying to figure out what's happening. And so there's a big part of that, of just him kind of figuring out, like, he doesn't know exactly how he feels about it at first. Like, he's kind of just observing. And then there's a line where it said, "Something had been working fiercely inside me, and for a moment I had forgotten the rest of the crowd." So he's kind of,
mm-hmm.
like, it goes back to the thing that Jack said about it being personal. Like, he's seeing this through, like, a very individual perspective. Like, he's really relating to this eviction.
I think that, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I definitely would think that Invisible Man is kind of just a character to follow the mass of people. And so originally, he's just, like, walking down the street, right? And then he sees all these people gathering around, and that's when he kind of gets immediately absorbed into the eviction. But I guess what I don't understand is, like, as he gets into the speech itself, how he can be, like, so contradicting against himself as he's saying,
mm-hmm.
like, we're law-abiding, and then we've talked about how he gets into a speech, like, we didn't even know what he's really talking about, because he's just
yeah.
kind of, he starts going back and forth with it. And so I think that an important part to, I guess, just be aware of is that he doesn't even know, like, what he's talking about. He's so back and forth with himself. He doesn't
yeah.
understand his own emotions that, I guess that's my thought on that.
Yeah, and I got to bring it up every podcast. We talk about the opposite stuff.
Because yeah, sure.
throughout the whole book, he's going back and forth between we're a law-abiding people, chill out, essentially. And then every couple lines, he's like, this man is 87 years old, and all of his personal items are strewn out in the snow like chicken guts. So I agree with what Natalie said, that he's just going back and forth. He doesn't really know what he thinks should happen. Even the crowd starts to get confused because he's like, follow the example of the leader in the newspaper. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know.
I definitely think that relates to, you know, the Booker T. Washington
yeah.
idea, where it's like, Booker T. Washington, yeah, he wants the activism and rising up for African Americans. But on the other hand, he's like, the only way for you to achieve that is to, like, support the people in power,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think
mm-hmm.
I feel like that we have this trend of just contradictions, like, over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this book has just been creating paradox after paradox of things that shouldn't
right.
be existing
good
together.
Word for
and,
it.
Like, that's what they are. And I definitely think what Natalie said before the podcast about, I definitely think he connects to the eviction, like, heavily when you said it's about he connects to it because he got expelled from the school, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that could be an underlying reason behind
like
it.
That. His own eviction.
Yeah, literally. It's like, I mean, different technically, like legally, but and I mean, he was told to leave.
He also planned on coming back, just like the crowd tried to get them back into their own house. He was like, I'm going to go back there and I'm going to kill Bledsoe.
Yeah.
Just like they were like, let's rush this cop. And then they beat the crap out of him, don't they?
Yeah.
Throw him out in the street.
And that's what I am.
That's what he wanted.
For a minute, wants to do to Bledsoe. He wants to beat the crap out of him.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that the speech that he gave, like, takes place after, like, as he was eating the yams, he was, like, reflecting and getting really resentful towards Bledsoe again. Like, all of this was super fresh in his mind. Like, it was only, like, 10 pages before that he was, like, kind of walking around and yelling about Bledsoe. So I feel like if that hadn't happened and hadn't been fresh in his mind, like, he wouldn't have the idea of being, like, dispossessed and having, like, disadvantages, like, pushed on them. Like, he definitely was feeling like something unjust had happened to him, and it was fresh in his mind, so that made him see this as even more unjust.
Yeah, and also a parallel I just kind of thought of was he does talk about, when he's talking about Bledsoe, he does talk about taking, I don't know what it's called, chitterlings. He said that he would expose Bledsoe for liking the southern food and throw it out into the street, and he would have to leave. And that's what happened to these people that got evicted. All their stuff is out in the street. So I just think that further reinforces the parallel between, you know, like Gwen was talking about, his reflection comes right before this. So I think there's certainly a connection there.
Yeah, like you're saying, like, it's fresh in his mind when just, like, the anger, the internal conflict within him. And I think he's definitely, like, growing more detached from the ideology he had before about being the only way he could advance himself was just doing what he knew before was supporting people in power, or, you know, just, like, sucking up to get himself higher in society. And I think, I'm going to say it again, but it's like, the blindfold is starting to come off again, you know?
Yeah.
With the eviction speech, he's like... But I think what's kind of frustrating for me to read it is that he's picking and choosing almost. Mm-hmm. Like, he's choosing when to be a good activist and choosing when to, like be rather selfish for himself, you know? I just think it's frustrating for me because, like, he's not all in, you know?
Yeah. I feel like this might... There's a lot of points. I've been reading the book and I've been writing... about probably 10 pages now. I keep writing blindfold? Because I keep waiting for this one moment where I'll be like, oh my God, he knows now. Like, he's self-aware of who he is. But I don't think we're there yet. But I feel like this is definitely a turn towards that direction. But I don't even think he knows that he is blindfolded. But I don't think he's aware that he's changing.
I also think one of the most important things that we've talked about is Adam saying, there's kind of it's moments where it slips off for a second and he sees things for how they are and then it gets back on. And I think when we talk about what are his motivations for the speech, I think the blindfold slipping is definitely one of them. You know, we talked about him reflecting on Bledsoe and then he comes to the scene that represents what he's feeling so perfectly. The blindfold is off for a couple minutes and he makes this very passionate, albeit confused speech. Definitely reflects on himself as well.
But I agree with you. I just think there's, like, you know, a level of hesitation.
Oh, for yourself. Sure.
There's always something that's holding him back. You know how the chats we have in class about, like, nobody can be completely porcelain or disconnected from everything, just, like, completely free. And I think the closest thing we've gotten to him being porcelain is in the prologue, you know, where he's just completely detached from everything.
And he definitely has the blindfold completely off.
Oh, yeah. At that point. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's the completely opposite person in the prologue, you know? He is violent. He knows. He's completely self-aware of what he's doing.
Yeah. There's another part. Like, it's right before he starts the speech. And he says, I saw them start up the steps and felt suddenly as though my head would split. I knew they were about to attack the man, and I was both afraid and angry, repelled and fascinated. I both wanted it and feared the consequences. So his, like, start to the speech was, like, kind of just a manifestation of him, like, not really knowing what to do. Like, the end of that paragraph says, I seem to totter on the edge of a great dark hole. Like, that's kind of him trying to decide how mm-hmm. he's going to react to this, and he doesn't really know either. It was just instinctive.
And saying he wasn't afraid of the violence, but rather afraid of what the violence would spark within himself, I think that would have to be something to do with him, his sight, when about the blindfold. I think, you know, he's afraid that he would join in on the violence and he would see it for what it really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's kind of, he's having some issues at this point in the story, walking around mumbling parts of his speeches on the streets at night. Yeah. And I think he's worried that if he sees someone ready to throw, to rise up against the man, that he's just going to lose it. I think he fears that tipping into the hole a little bit.
Yeah. I definitely think, like, how we've been talking in class, you know, there's no such thing. They are, like, the only conflict there is inner conflict, or, like, internal conflict yeah. about this character.
Yeah.
I think that rings true for him, because he can't fully decide, you know?
Yeah. I think when we talked about the Golden Day also being kind of a representation of human nature in one little package.
Yeah.
I think Harlem kind of is like that for the I Am sometimes.
Well, yeah.
A lot of everything he encounters reflects something within himself.
Yeah, well, I definitely think, like, going back to, like, the poor swan and that idea of, like, you can't be fully disconnected, I definitely think another motivation for him doing the speech was, like, the fact that he wanted to, like, prove to these people that he's,
mm-hmm.
like, with them, or I guess, like,
mm-hmm.
he's not deciding that for himself. He's letting other people determine, like, what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it's another level of him being not disconnected. Or just he's letting other things or other factors determine his actions or how he's feeling. I just think, like, the only time we get the disconnection is when we see him in the prologue. That's the only time I've seen it, at least.
Do you think that I Am even wants to be law-abiding people? Like, I think it's one thing to say we are law-abiding, but he, as much as he hints at this violence that's supposedly inside him, I feel like he wants to get at that part. I mean, like we saw in the prologue, like, obviously he becomes some violent animal. Yeah. So clearly he accesses that part of him. But I think it's kind of ironic for him to say we're law-abiding people, but, like, we know that he becomes someone who's going to just...
Yeah.
Who stands up for himself and beat the crap out of someone. So is standing up for yourself even law-abiding at that point? Yeah,
it's almost like he's convincing himself, too. Because like I said, he says he was afraid of what it would stir in himself. Yeah. So him saying to the crowd, guys, relax, like, we're supposed to be law-abiding people, is almost like telling himself, like, cool it, like, you're about to go crazy.
Yeah, he's getting fired up about it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Dangerous.
And I think part of it,
go ahead.
Is that he, like, still wants to appeal to, like, the white people a little bit. Like, early on, he was, like, when he was driving Norton around, he, like, really wanted to seem, like, very civilized yeah. and, like, have this image. So there's probably still, like, that part of him left in him. Even if, like you said, he kind of does want to access that other side of himself, there's still a little bit of that instinctive motivation because he's been, like, putting on this act for so long.
Yeah, I think that maybe he even says part of it as we're law-abiding people because he doesn't even want to see these, like, white people beat up. But mm-hmm. at the same time, just more wrestles with the idea that he doesn't even know himself because, I mean, probably part of him doesn't want to... If it was Norton about to get beat up, you know he would defend yeah. him. You yeah. know he would be like, no, don't do that. He'd probably jump in front of Norton. Like, we know that. But I think that the speech, the motivation for the speech is so blurred because part of him probably wants to save these white men from getting beat. And the other part of him wants to literally beat the crap out of them and just join mm-hmm. in the crowd, you know. So I think... The motivation is very blurry. You can take it two directions.
Yeah, and that's probably why the speech comes off so conflicted.
Yeah.
Well, it's like when we had the, like I said, Booker T before, but also Du Bois. Or yeah. I don't know how to say it.
Yeah.
But, like, when he makes fun of Booker T for saying, or, like, he makes it satirical when he says, you're literally contradicting yourself when you say you want us to be activists and fight for what we believe and what's right, but you're telling him, the only reason to do that is to respect people that are higher than you. Yeah. Like, it's almost like, I don't know, it's frustrating for me to read it knowing that, like, there's always, like, that one thing that's going to be contradicting it.
Or, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, there's always, like, a rather toxic motivation behind it, you know? Like, mm-hmm. he's just doing it to, like, better himself or, like, not even going all in, like I said before.
Yeah.
I guess one other thing I'm thinking of now as I'm reading this chapter a little bit, what do we think? Okay, first of all, do we think the speech was bad? Like, if we were these police officers and we were like, all right, they were starting a quote-unquote riot, like, what aspect of that would be bad? Because technically, he's not promoting the violence, technically.
Oh, you don't mean quality. You mean, like, was it?
Well, I'm referencing to the point where when the police get there and they point to invisible man and they say, they're like, he called, pointing straight at me. And then he's like, we've cleaned out the sidewalk, whatever. Like, we're picking up the junk off there. But, like, I want to know what, I guess, would make I am guilty. Because I don't even think he was in the wrong in the situation.
I did think about this a little bit. And I think it's just the fact that a black man was standing in front of a bunch of other black people delivering a speech. I think that, in general, no matter what he was talking about, scared them a little bit. Because they pull up to the scene, they see, I think it was a marshal with his gun out, up against the building, and then a black dude talking to a crowd of black people. And they definitely, even if he was like, don't attack him, they're going to be like, why does this guy have so much power? What is he doing? Yeah. Even if he's on their side, they're still going to be wary of the power of an individual like that.
Is Invisible Man a movie?
There's a lot of power there, like, to inspire social change that they're scared of, like you were saying. And also, like, the content of his speech when they get there. Like, he's talking about them being dispossessed, and he's really uniting them. Like, he's saying, we're law-abiding, so who's being dispossessed? Can it be us? These old ones are out in the snow, but we're here with them. Like, he is making it about all of them and uniting them. So I think that's more of a threat to the police officers because they now have this whole crowd against them instead of just, like, one old couple who's being evicted and, like, some bystanders who just see what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also did want to call another parallel up. In the Bledsoe talks about how if white people want to sell you a lie, they will because they own newspapers and all and the news and stuff like that. And I am... talks a little bit about Bledsoe, how he wants to expose him, and how they'd all talk about it in the newspapers. And then even later on, and again in the chapter, the cop says, if I say there's a riot, there's a riot. So it's a little off topic, but I kind of wanted to bring in the parallel of, like, no matter what, whatever happened here, they're able to sell a story and make people believe it and turn people against him.
Off topic, kind of, but still very relevant.
Okay.
I definitely, what was also kind of frustrating for me while I was reading the speech was that he's saying, like, black men, brothers, black brothers.
Yeah.
I was like, bro, you've been literally contradicting them and been against them the whole book.
Yeah.
And now you're saying, like you're almost, like, patronizing them. It's just, like, I think it's just a little irritating for me to read it and say, like, oh, so now you're deciding to help them out. Okay.
Yeah.
Since it's not working out for you now, you're just going to decide to join them. It's just like, it's just a little frustrating, you know? See, like, all this time you could have been doing that, and now you're deciding to because it's not working out for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the organization that he comes into contact with witnesses the speech. They track him down, and they call everyone brother in their group. So I feel like there's something to look at there. That all of a sudden he feels united for the first time, calls him brother, and then he's called brother by a white man soon after. So yeah, I just thought that was an interesting connection.
Yeah, I think, like, the part that Adam brought up, like, part of his motivation for the speech is, like, he's starting to embrace that aspect of himself a little bit again and starting to feel the sense of unity. But I think ultimately, like, you can see in the speech that he doesn't even really know exactly why he's saying it. Like, the motivation for it more comes from, like, this internal conflict he's having that he's trying to express some part of for himself.
Right.
Well, I think we've dissected this issue pretty thoroughly, and I would like to thank you for listening to our podcast again.
All right.
We'll see you next time. Thank you.